The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is a podcast about money and inequality. But I've been thinking about earthquakes a lot lately. I found these videos on YouTube. The footage is grainy. It's usually coming from a surveillance camera or one of those spy cams people use to keep an eye on their pets while they're out. At first, nothing's happening. You see a nondescript office or living room, sometimes the inside of a store. And then a dog jolts into the frame or jumps up from somewhere you didn't notice he was lying. He starts barking. Then darting around, seemingly away from whatever danger he senses, but also maybe towards it. To the viewer, at first, it's funny, because it looks like he's trying to scare the wind. But then, a few seconds later, everything in the room starts moving. Televisions fall over, lamps wobble, paintings swing. What the dogs are reacting to are P waves, the earliest signs of an earthquake. Humans can't hear them. Sometimes we feel them as a jolt. But they sound an alarming signal to dogs and some other animals, up to a minute or two before the bigger waves come and the damage begins. There's another thing I learned about earthquakes. The fault lines, the cracks in the earth whose movement caused the shaking. Each one has an upper limit to its potency, determined by its length and depth. In other words, the existing fractures are what determine how bad the event will ultimately be. The pandemic, in so many ways, has felt like an earthquake to me. It was an event that we all felt, but not equally. There were existing fault lines. Some economies had programs that people could depend on when their jobs suddenly disappeared because of lockdowns. Others didn't. Some healthcare systems were already dealing with doctor and nurse shortages going into a pandemic that would sap the last bit of their resources. Others didn't. And in some countries, workers had few protections like paid time off if they caught the virus. Others didn't. As soon as the impact hit in early 2020, we knew where those fault lines were and saw the damage immediately. In deaths, job losses, and so many other ways. And it's only now that some of the dust from the initial hit has settled that we're able to see what we're left with.
Jobless claims coming in, I mean, really jumping from the week before. Pretty brutal, 3.2 million.
A record 6.6 million Americans filed for unemployment last week.
Many Brazilians lost their jobs during lockdowns while prices for rent, food and gas are on the rise.
Indian working women were the worst impacted by the pandemic.
Well, now to the billionaire boom.
According to Bloomberg, super yacht charters are up over 340%.
And a billionaire was created every 26 hours during this pandemic.
No, I'm not waiting in line for a COVID test with the public. Gross.
It is time for a wealth tax in America.
Welcome to The Paycheck. I'm Rebecca Greenfield. It's not often that a crisis hits the entire world. The effects of war and famine and natural disasters can reach far and wide. COVID was different because it happened everywhere. But over the last 2 years, we've seen how a million different variables, or those fault lines, determined our health, safety, and economic security. People with the fewest resources were more likely to die, especially in the earliest waves. And then poorer countries had less access to life-saving vaccines. Then there were the economic disparities.
Millions of people are at risk of hunger because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Even in the US and Europe, more and more individuals are relying on food handouts just to get by.
With unemployment levels soaring, international organizations expect the income gap between the richest and the poorest to get even wider.
The fear early on in the pandemic was that we'd come out of this crisis worse off. It felt almost inevitable. But that's not exactly how things played out over the last few years. In fact, what happened varied widely, depending on how governments and societies stepped in to address the crisis and what kinds of foundations they had going in. Over the next 8 weeks, we're going to 7 different countries to see how this world-changing event shifted the balance between the very richest and the very poorest and everyone in between. Even before the pandemic, alarm bells had been going off about global inequality. Places with greater relative equality are more stable. They provide people with economic security and more mobility to better their lives. And going into the pandemic, some of the most equal places in the world, like the US and European countries, were moving in the wrong direction. So when COVID rattled the global economy, economists and policymakers were worried about what might happen. So what happened? I decided to ask Ben Steverman. He's a reporter at Bloomberg who covers wealth inequality, spending his days deep in data and talking with experts and economists. He's been keeping a close eye on wealth inequality during the pandemic. So, Ben, right before the pandemic hit, what direction was wealth inequality headed in globally?
Coming into the pandemic, there were several trends that we were watching. There were a few positive trends. There was a growth of the middle class in Asian countries, especially China, that overall reduced inequality worldwide. And then you had the number of people living in extreme poverty had actually fallen. So those were positive trends, but there was some concern that they were running out of steam. And we had these negative trends that were making inequality worse. In the developed countries like the United States, middle class was not doing as well. And then you also had not just the top 1%, really it's the top 0.1% or 0.0001%, the people at the very top were doing much better than everyone else. And really, there was a lot of concern about the amount of power and wealth that folks at the top had. So we were wondering, would those trends continue? And there was a lot of pessimism that basically a recession would come along and it would hurt the middle class and the wealthy would benefit.
Okay, so then March 2020, economies basically shut down entirely. It sounds like economists and politicians and policymakers, they would all think it's definitely going to get worse.
There was a lot of pessimism at that early moment in the pandemic, and I ended up writing about this and researching some of the history. And what I found was that when you have these major disruptions, if you look at past pandemics, for example, inequality doesn't always get worse. Sometimes it gets better. Sometimes these disruptions, either they can destroy a lot of wealth at the top and then allow people at the bottom to rise up, or it can change the labor market, it can change the financial market in these really surprising ways. So I didn't think at that moment we really knew what was going to happen. We were really entering into an unpredictable situation.
So of those two potential scenarios, things getting worse or something surprising happening, what ended up happening?
We're only just starting to get the data to answer that question. What we do know from the last 2 years is that the billionaires and the top 1% have done very, very well. The world's 500 richest people gained about $1.7 trillion over a couple years. If you just look at Elon Musk, for example, there was a moment after he became the richest man in the world where he was worth more than $300 billion. And there was a lot of chatter at the time that he might have a chance to become a trillionaire. At the same time, governments, at least in the United States and the EU, had more of a sense that we need to spread the relief. And so people at the bottom got a fair amount in terms of stimulus payments, extra unemployment checks, an enhanced child tax credit that was introduced in the United States. And so if you actually look at the bottom 50% or so, their wealth has actually gone up quite a bit. It's basically doubled in the last 2 years in terms of dollar amount. And it's still a tiny share of total U.S. wealth, but their share has been growing. And we don't know how long this is going to last. As inflation comes along here, inflation could actually just completely erase all these gains in the next few years. We'll see. But for now, there are some signs that the poorest Americans, sort of the working class, you could say, and the bottom 50% of the country have done pretty well considering.
So that sounds like a pretty U.S. or maybe Western Europe focused story. How did it play out in other countries that were maybe starting from different places of inequality?
Well, not every place had the resources to give a big bailout. Not everyone can afford trillions and trillions of dollars of stimulus. So different countries made different policy choices, and that ended up influencing the economy and how those countries went through the pandemic. Another issue there is COVID and how countries manage COVID and how much either lockdowns or the virus itself disrupted their economy. Some were in lockdown for really long periods of time. And both of those things, the stimulus and managing the virus, ended up having disparate impacts depending on where you lived. If you look at Taiwan, which really managed the virus quite well, its economy actually grew in 2020, unlike most of the world. And it actually grew faster than 2019 somehow. U.S. economy, of course, shrank in 2020. But then if you look down at Peru, which had pretty severe lockdowns and was really impacted by the virus, Peru's economy shrank more than 11% in 2020, one of the biggest drops in GDP in the world. If you look at it, it's really country by country. Again, we're still getting the data. We don't know exactly where this is all going to end up. But one area I'm really interested in is South America and Latin America.
Why is Latin America so interesting to you?
Before the pandemic, we had a situation where inequality was getting worse in a lot of Western countries. One of the questions we had was, where is this all headed? If you look at Latin America, these are middle-income countries, and they have a level of inequality that is about the same as sub-Saharan Africa, places that are much, much poorer. So you have a situation where in Brazil, for example, you have almost half the wealth of the country is owned by the top 1%. In the United States, it's about a third. But the question was, are the U.S. and other rich countries on the way to that same kind of level of inequality? Are we going to also maybe have the same kind of extreme politics and extreme gaps in society that seem to go along with high inequality?
So it's basically a cautionary tale.
In a way, yeah.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
Ben mentioned Brazil. It's one of the most unequal countries in one of the most unequal regions in the world. So that's the first place we're going this season, specifically to Brasilia. It's the capital, and it also happens to be the most unequal place in the country. My colleague Shannon Sims, an editor at Bloomberg, lives there and is giving us the view on the ground.
Well, I first moved to Brazil back in 2012. When I got here, it felt like a totally different country. There was a sense at that time that the middle class, called classe C, was completely booming. So families were booking Disney World vacations, and they were investing in real estate, they were opening new businesses. In 2009, The Economist magazine published an iconic cover story that showed the famous Christ the Redeemer statue taking off like a rocket. And the headline read, "Brazil Takes Off, Latin America's Success Story." By 2015, things had already started moving in the other direction. Growth was slowing down, the currency was hurting, and then the pandemic hit, and it hit really hard. More than 650,000 people here have died so far, but the impact on the daily lives of Brazilians has also been really startling. There are lots of things I could point to show how bad things are, like how the real plunged in value almost overnight in March 2020, and how Brazilians have loaded up on debt that they can't keep up with. The average credit card interest rate here has hit almost 350%. But there's one big, big group of people who we don't often hear about and who have had it particularly bad during the pandemic: single moms. Ever since I moved to Brazil, I've been struck by the number of single mothers here. Current estimates suggest that there could be as many as 20 million single moms in Brazil. That's close to the entire population of Australia. The trend is only increasing. The number of birth certificates registered without a father jumped by about 30% over the past year, which indicates the group is growing. Before COVID, single moms already had it tough, with trying to sort out childcare, taking unpaying fathers to court, commuting to jobs they were lucky to have in a tough market. They seemed like they were barely hanging on, in a precarious position, almost like an underclass. COVID, it seemed, would have only made their struggle harder and only widened the distance between their reality and how they'd like their lives to be. So to better understand just how these women are managing in the wake of COVID, I followed one woman, a 35-year-old mother of two named Hinata, through her day, which starts before dawn at 5 a.m. It's still dark when I pull up to Hinata's house. She's opening the gate for me and immediately starts blurting out how she's grappling with a dilemma already.
Today we got a problem. My kids won't go to school this morning. There's going to be a teacher strike, so they won't go.
Teachers are striking for better pay here in Samambaia, a working-class satellite city on the outskirts of Brasilia. So, rather than drop her kids off at school on the way to work like she normally would, she's having to set up Plan B. They'll stay at home until they walk alone to their after-school programs. 14-year-old Juan is learning trombone, and 9-year-old Hailani likes dance. Hinata rummages through their backpacks, checking to make sure they have what they need for the day as they stir in their beds. She wishes them a good morning.
Bom dia, Juan.
Bom dia.
As she gets ready for work, she makes sure to leave some dinner on the stove as well. That's because she won't get back before 9 p.m. tonight. Hopefully in time to pull up the covers on her kids as they get in bed, but maybe not. Hinata pours coffee from a brown thermos as she eyes the time on her phone. She's got to be out the door when her alarm rings in about 5 minutes. She works from 7:30 to 5:30 every day in a big glass government building in the heart of Brasilia, a 45-minute drive away. She's called a copeira, a cup lady, and she serves little sugary cups of coffee to government officials all day long. The people in suits who drink her coffee are the same officials making the kinds of decisions that can change the lives of Hinata and other single moms overnight. Women who are just trying to figure out how to get by in the wake of the pandemic. Despite their numbers, single mothers are also one of the segments of the population that most often get left behind. The National Statistics Agency here reports that 63% of households led by single moms are living below the poverty line. For those living above the poverty line, like Hinata, the unforeseen arrival of the pandemic and now its economic fallout are threatening to pull her under. To avoid that plummet, she's had to pivot. And so she's piled on top of her regular coffee lady job a hodgepodge assortment of side hustles, jobs that are what economists might call part of the gig economy. As the pandemic has worn on, she's added more and more. And so now there's hardly a minute in her day when she's not working.
I'm passando pano na casa, vou lavando a louça, faço a comida. Aí no sábado, quando eu chego da faxina, eu lavo roupa, porque tem o uniforme dos meninos durante a semana, né?
5:45, time to get out the door. Hinata says COVID has turned her life upside down. She said she's been backed into taking on these extra jobs just to keep pace with the cost of living. As she darts around the house, quickly packing up for the day, she tells me how she's battling to keep above the welfare line because she doesn't want her family's finances left to the whims of government assistance. In just the past year, consumer prices have risen more than 10% here. And the most recent inflation forecasts show that trend's only going to get worse. Nowhere's been spared by the economic impact of COVID. But in Brazil, the shutdown's disruption to the supply chain was compounded by extreme drought conditions that ruined crops last year. And that was before Russia's invasion of Ukraine made everything worse. The result? The price of a tomato doubled over a period of months, along with so many other staples. The value of the local currency started evaporating amid all the turmoil, and soon, Renata went from serving fresh salads to her kids to not being able to afford anything beyond rice and beans.
Né, assim, o básico. Hoje você não faz R$300, é R$600, R$700, o básico. O básico do básico. Gás de cozinha tá quase R$150. A gasolina foi para R$7.38.
The basics today, you can't. It's R$600, R$700, the basics, the most basic of the basics. So the cost of living for Brazilians due to COVID, due to the war, due to everything that's happening, the cost of living increased a lot, really a lot.
Não é impossível, mas é complicado.
It's not impossible to manage as a single mom, but it is complicated.
As we get into her car, I notice the gas gauge shows that we have less than a quarter tank. It seems a little low for us to get all the way into the city.
Pronto, agora nós vamos buscar a Dona Rosa. Ela também é uma guerreira.
Now we're going to pick up Dona Rosa, and she's a warrior woman too, you know.
To make a little extra cash, one of Renata's side hustles is driving a woman named Dona Rosa for a flat fee. Renata met her when she Ubered her home one night. And as it would turn out, Dona Rosa is a single mom herself.
Bom dia, Dona Rosa. Tudo bom com a senhora? Deixa eu botar aqui minha máscara, Dona Rosa.
Já tem anos que eu me levanto 4 da madrugada.
It's been years that I get up at 4 a.m. It's been years. I raise my kids in this rhythm.
Renata, who still has her eye on the time, instructs Dona Rosa to put on her seatbelt as Rosa hands her 30 reais. Dona Rosa is a small woman in her 60s, from the northern Brazilian state of Piauí. It's one of the poorest in the country, and the kind of hot, desperate place where they say only the strong survive. Dona Rosa carries that battle-faced spirit with her.
Não, eu sou do Piauí. Eu cheguei aqui em 75.
I'm from Piauí. I got here in 75. When we got here, we would roll up our sleeves and get to work.
She raised her children on her own. But as she tells me, things are worse today than she's ever seen them. Rosa works as a housekeeper in one of the richer neighborhoods of Brasilia, called Sudoeste, where organic grocery stores and cocktail bars and fancy playgrounds for the kids line the blocks. She's worked for the same family for more than 5 years, but since COVID began, they cut back her days from 5 to 2 per week. So she used to make 750 reais per week. Now she's paid 300. And there's a big catch. They told her they don't want her taking the bus because she'll have too much exposure to the virus and can bring it into their house that way. If she wants to keep working, she has to take an Uber. And she has to pay for it. As a result, the cost of her daily commute increased tenfold, and Rosa is not happy about it.
Na minha passagem que ela teve o direito de me dar, não acha? Mas não, eu pago ainda com meu pouquinho que eu recebo.
She should be paying part of my fare. I think she had the obligation to pay. Don't you think? But no, I pay with the tiny bit that I earn.
Renata and Rosa dive into a heated conversation about how COVID has underlined inequality here.
É porque o rico acha que a doença do COVID só vem da gente que é pobre. Ah, eu vou deixar de, não vou deixar mais a diarista vir, porque se ela vir, ela vai trazer COVID para mim. Só que não sabe eles.
Já vem de onde, né?
Não sabe eles que quem traz muitas vezes as doenças para cá são eles que viajam, que pegam aviões, que vão para outros países. A gente tá aqui
nesse... The rich think that COVID only comes from poor people. So I'm not gonna let the cleaning woman come because she could bring it to me. But they don't think about the fact that the people who actually bring the virus are those who travel around everywhere, who take planes, who go to other countries, We just stay in our little world. We just go downtown, back home, downtown, back home. We don't leave the house.
The fact that rich employers view people like Renata and Dona Rosa as the source of infection is especially galling to Renata because of how the outbreak happened here. At the beginning of the pandemic, there was a major super spreader event at a luxury beach resort called Trancoso. It put on display how the wealthy's jet-setting lifestyle was contributing to the outbreak. Meanwhile, Renata has never traveled outside of the city. In fact, she's only able to travel as far as her gas tank can take her. We pull up to the gas station, and Renata asks the attendant for 30 reais worth of gas. I realize the 30 reais Rosa gave her earlier is the exact amount Renata needs to get them into Brasilia this morning. Renata's constantly on the hunt for cheap fuel, which is getting harder to find. Petrobras, the state oil giant, increased prices by nearly 20% in mid-March. Now, Brazil has some of the most expensive gas in the world. And since she can only afford a little bit at a time, she's developed this finely tuned sense of exactly how much she'll need in the tank to get her to the next destination before the car dies.
With COVID, it has gotten worse. We could buy things then that we can only buy now, working double the hours because the price of everything increased.
Rosa jumps in.
Just watch what happens when I go to the grocery store. I can't even buy a kilo of chicken.
It's complicated. This is the reality for Brazilians, a chokehold every day.
Renata drops Rosa off and heads to the government ministry. 10 hours later, I meet her as she's getting out.
What could you do if your data was working for you and not against you? With Bloomberg delivering enterprise data directly to your systems, you get easy access to the details you want, optimized for higher-level analysis, and financial data experts committed to helping you maximize your every move. Our data is made for more, so you can show the world what you're made of. Visit Bloomberg.com/enterprise data to learn more.
Oi, tudo bom? Como foi o dia?
Corrido. Super corrido.
As she's walking to her car, I ask her how her day went. But I notice her mood has shifted. When I left her at work, she was chipper. Now, she seems like she's forcing a smile, and I soon discover she's actually furious.
Vou mandar um áudio e esperar ela responder depois.
I'm going to send an audio message, and let's see if they answer me. Because the son of the owner is ignoring me. He is ignoring all of us. I've got to call quickly because the office is about to close.
Boa tarde, Dona Maria do Carmo. Aqui quem fala é Renata, aqui do conselho.
She sits down in the driver's seat and almost immediately starts sending a firm but polite voice note to her former employer. The company owes her 1,700 reais. That is weeks overdue. For Renata, that's a month and a half pay missing from her bank account. It's not the only problem she's dealing with. She's also taking the father of one of her kids to court for not paying child support, money she desperately needs. And throughout the day, she's had to be checking in on her kids because they're home alone. But she doesn't have time to worry about all that now, not when she could be making money driving Uber, her new pandemic job. She's got 4 to 6 more hours of work ahead of her.
Então bora lá ligar o aplicativo, né? Bora trabalhar. Bora ganhar dinheiro.
Let's go ahead and turn on the app. Let's work and make some money.
Renata had never considered driving an Uber before until the pandemic made it necessary. She needed a quick way to start making money to keep up with the surging costs of food. A friend suggested buying a car and paying it off by driving Uber. Except now, costs have increased even higher than she imagined. So she's locked into having to drive Uber as much as she possibly can, until she can barely hold her eyes open, just to not fall behind on her car payment.
É tão bom. Eu já tive dias de sair do trabalho assim, de falar assim, ah, eu não vou rodar hoje não, com tua cabeça não.
Só que eu Sometimes falo, I leave work and say, I'm not going to drive today, because I am not in the right headspace. But then I think I will have to drive around, because I've got this car note and everything else to pay.
She starts to pull up to a gas station, but sees the price and swerves back onto the road.
Geez, they've already increased the price of gas. Shoot, I'm not going to fill up here.
Riding around all day made me realize she'd been holding her life together by a thread. And then COVID came and took all these tenuous situations and just stretched her to the breaking point. Things were never easy for Renata. And then COVID came along and threatened to snap all of those fragile strings that Renata was tying together. Job market disruptions from shutdowns and supply chain breakdowns that led to inflation. It all meant that Renata's options for work got smaller, even while she had to work more and more to keep up with prices. In the aftermath of the pandemic, Renata is facing down economic forces that are too much for even a self-described guerreira, or warrior woman. Renata's a hustler, but she's working to her max. And she's just one woman, just one mom, in a place where there are 20 million like her, each of them just trying to sort out a way to get by in this new, harsh, increasingly unequal world. It's starting to get dark out, and she's running low on gas, as always.
Let me see how much it is here. Oh my God, it's going up everywhere. Just because the government said they're going to lower the price of gasoline, they say the station increased the price of gasoline, there's really screwing us.
During Renata's Uber shift, she drives from Asa Sul to Asa Norte, from one nice neighborhood to another, bringing people home from work to their families. She tells me how driving Uber gives her a unique window into other people's lives. She says she sees people ostentando, showing off every weekend.
Todo final de semana, lanchezinha, bebida, regada a mulheres, regada
a drogas. She says it's a trip on the yacht, or drinks, or women, or drugs. Meanwhile, a lot of people are experiencing hunger. Inequality is on her mind as she goes from one ride to the next.
Muito, a desigualdade está enorme. A gente, eu costumo dizer sempre, a gente não vive num país socialista, nunca. Vivemos em país capitalista.
Inequality is enormous. We don't live in a socialist country. We live in a capitalist country, where the rich will always be on top and the lower class will be at the bottom of the well.
Her Uber rides also make her think about her own life and limitations.
E ontem eu fui pegar uma jovem ali naquelas escolas ali da Asa Sul de inglês.
Yesterday I went to pick up a young person at one of those English language schools in the South Zone. And I thought, wow, my daughter's never going to be able to attend a school like this with the money I make.
I looked it up. A year of tuition at that school costs more than $14,000 per year. Renata's total income is less than half that.
Não é fácil. Tem dias que eu estou esgotada, né? Porque eu tenho três trabalhos. Então, e ainda fora que eu tenho os meus filhos, eu tenho minha casa, eu tenho minha função de dona de casa, que eu também não posso deixar a desejar.
There are days when I'm totally wiped out because I have three jobs, and I have my kids and run the household, and I can't disappoint.
She continues driving. Along the way, she passes the modern monuments, the hulking shopping malls, the Congress building, and the presidential palace. If she's lucky, she drives across one of Brasilia's postcard bridges at sunset.
Uma coisa também que eu gosto muito quando eu vou ali pro lado do lago, eu sempre dou uma parada. Olho pro horizonte ali através da água assim. Agradeço a Deus porque
Something I like a lot as well is when I pass by the side of the lake. I always stop to look at the horizon over the water and thank God.
Mãe, pega lá. Não. Tá muito tarde. Oh, mãe.
She's arriving home at 9:30 p.m. tonight. but she could work longer. If she does 11 more rides, she'd get 120 reais of incentive pay, about $25. Today, though, she makes the tough choice to forego that money so she can see her kids before they go to sleep. She gets home, and they have a family dinner, a late one. After, she sends them to wash up and get ready for bed as she does the dishes and sets the alarm for 5 a.m.
The pandemic's toll on Brazil and people like Renata is the worst-case scenario, a widening divide between the rich and everyone else, which has made daily life a struggle for many people. But there's another issue, something Ben and I talked about.
The real question is there sort of a natural spot that inequality heads in a capitalist society? Like, over time, do we naturally become more and more unequal up to a certain level until something comes along and stops it? Or can we do things, policy things, that will prevent inequality from getting to that point or from reverse it so that without having a revolution? Like, it would be nice if we could have a more equal society without having the kind of disruption that World War II, for example, brought along, or the pandemics of the Middle Ages brought along.
Next week on The Paycheck, we head to a part of the world where wealth inequality actually reversed for one simple reason. Poor and low-income people got a lot of no-strings-attached cash.
The first emotion I felt, I remember, it was like almost disbelief, like, me? I got, like, my name never gets picked.
Thanks for listening to The Paycheck. If you like our show, please head over to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to rate, review, and subscribe. This episode was hosted by me, Rebecca Greenfield, and reported by me, Shannon Sims, and Ben Steverman. It was edited by Francesca Levy with help from Janet Paskin, Rakshita Saluja, and me. We also had editing help from Danielle Balbi, Shelley Banjo, Kristen V. Brown, Nicole Flato, Gilda DiCarli, Alyssa McDonald, and Kai Schultz. This episode was produced by Gilda DiCarli and sound engineered by Matt Keim. Our original music is by Leo Sidran. The voiceovers you heard were by Camilla Fontana and Isadora Columbi. Special thanks to Magnus Henriksen, McKinnon De Kuyper, Margaret Sutherland, Stacey Wong, and Aisha Diallo. Francesca Levy is Bloomberg's head of podcasts. See you next week.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.